Hey folks, welcome back to a bonus edition of the High Performance Human Podcast. My name's Simon Ward, I'm your host this week and every other week. And today my guest is Ian Hamilton. Ian is the race director for the Outlaw Series of Triathlons. He's also the founder of One Step Beyond. And in the 30 years that Ian has been presenting triathlons in Great Britain, this is the first time he's ever faced a crisis such as the one that we're facing now from COVID-19. I should probably add that Ian's not the only one who's facing something like this for the first time, right through to the Prime Minister and leaders of other countries. Nobody has seen anything like this before. Nobody has a playbook. So as you'll hear from Ian, everybody's pretty much playing in the dark here and trying to find solutions. And on the way, they'll make mistakes. And Ian's pretty candid in admitting that at One Step Beyond, they did make mistakes. And he talks about how they tried to fix those. He's very open in responding to my questions about some of the negative comments that have been coming on Facebook and other social media. And he's very candid about why it's almost impossible for race directors of any event to offer full refunds. We have a good conversation about some of the background work that One Step Beyond have been doing in conjunction with other race organisers and British Triathlon. And we also talk about what triathlon might look like if we get to do any races in 2020, or more probably in 2021. And to be quite frank, things are going to be different for quite some time. So that's enough from me. Let's crack on and listen to what Ian has to say firstly about that big announcement that came out from One Step Beyond this morning. Welcome to the show, Ian Hamilton, One Step Beyond founder and director of the Outlaw Series of Racing.
Afternoon, Simon.
Yeah, Ian, sad news today, I'm afraid, for everybody concerned with the Outlaw events this year, but particularly the Outlaw Full, you know, as a partner and, you know, integral part of the commentary team there, seeing the news this morning that you've had to cancel 2020's race. Difficult decision for you or inevitable?
Yeah, I guess the longer we got, or the closer that we got to the event, it became inevitable. We put out a statement not that long ago, actually, basically saying it's our expectation that we were going to be able to have to cancel. And I guess if you read between the lines, we were sort of saying that we didn't want to cancel. But, and not necessarily pressure from any one organisation, you know, not sort of like not government-led or anything like that, but we sort of, we took it as close as we possibly could, still wanting to put the event on because ultimately there is, and I don't think, obviously, there's the potential for Wales to still exist, but there's going, you know, there's no full distance events in Europe, there's nothing in England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. And so from our point of view, we wanted to be the one that sort of delivered an event. However, reality of social distancing, and then because we looked at how we could actually organise it from a social distancing point of view, and then also sort of like from a welfare of athletes, a welfare of trying to find volunteers, you know, and it just sort of like, yeah, the inevitable decision was that we unfortunately got to cancel. It guts us, absolutely guts us.
Yeah.
However, we know it's the right decision.
And I think ultimately that's got to be the thing that overrides, isn't it? Is what's the decision? What's the right decision morally and ethically, you know, for the safety of for everybody, not just the athletes, but it is the volunteers and, you know, the spectators as well. Because, I mean, I was going through this in my own mind. You know, I've still got an outlaw distance event that I'm entered for in Canada this year. Do I really feel comfortable getting on a plane and travelling, even if they say it's okay? And when I get to that event, do I feel comfortable being around several thousand other people? You know, what's it going to be like from a volunteer's point of view? It's very difficult to man an aid station and be socially distanced from people, you know. And how do they, just the little things like, how do you hand up refreshments and cups of water to people when you're supposed to be keeping yourself germ free? And how do you protect yourself from sniffing, spluttering, coughing, heaving, wheezing triathletes that are passing you at close quarters? It's just, it seems like an impossible task.
And that we, I mean, we've done, and we will continue to do this type of work about how we're going to, how we will at some point put on a social distancing, social distance triathlon. You know, so like, I think registration is relatively simple. We can definitely do that. The race briefing is going to be much better, I suspect. We'll end up doing that online rather than you and I potentially boring a lot of people from a long time. You know, it's sort of like even just
hold on, hold on a minute. I'm just thinking. What you mean is that when we've got them captive in a room, it's very difficult for them to escape. Yeah, but if they're listening online, they can just turn the sound down.
Yeah. Just fast forward. Can you fast forward just to the least they're interested. And that's the thing you see. And it's sort of like we even just talking about organising a race makes you feel better. But that we've gone through a lot of stuff. But the reality is, until we know what we're dealing with, what we're trying to achieve, how big transition's got to be, and all those sorts of things, we're just going to have to do the same as everyone else, which is sort of like, you know, postpone it until next year.
I mean, even if you can get the volunteers to be socially distanced, I mean, I'm just thinking of the finish line at any race. You know, spectators are going to have to stand 6 feet apart, so there's going to be 50 spectators standing at the finish line cheering. We're going to have a little bit of canned noise and applause, really, unless you have all of those spectators wearing PPE.
Being practical about things, we know anybody that crosses the finish line, there's the hundreds of spectators, so they're gone. There's the three or four commentators. You are an outlaw. You cross the line. 50% of people are in great spirits and they're fantastic. The other 50% are absolutely in bits and they're on the carpet. Normally, there'll be, you know, willing and able volunteers to come along and pick them up, and then, you know, medical then get their opportunity to do what they need to do. None of that can really happen. You know, and that's before you talk about the specifics of do we know whether the virus is airborne? Yes, we do. Do we know whether it's waterborne? We actually don't at the moment. There's nothing that, and we've looked into it. So it's sort of like, how do you social distance yourself in the swim? And these are all things that we've got to go through. So it's weird. Making the decision to cancel wasn't great and is horrible. However, I know it's the right thing to do.
And ultimately, as a race director, you know, you guys are passionate. There's not one race director that I've ever met that is purely in it for the money and doesn't give a monkeys about the athletes and about the volunteers and about spectators. You're all passionate. Most of you have been triathletes. Some of you are still taking part in triathlon. So you know what that part of the sport's like. And I mean, from an outlaw perspective, that's why you guys put on great events, because you've all been athletes, so you've all experienced the good and the bad, and you just try to do, you know, make everything the best of what you've ever seen. So I can imagine it's even harder for you guys. I've seen criticism of the fact that you weren't taking into account the athletes, but I've been part of this race since. I remember when you told us that the Outlaw was going to take place and invited me to be a commentator, and it's been great. The whole 10 years of being in the finish line. Ella and Leah have grown up with it. Your mum and dad were integrally to the, you know, the volunteer part right from the beginning and still are. So it's a family-run thing. If they cut you in half, it'd say Outlaw, wouldn't it? So I can imagine that for you, it's a personal issue as well as a commercial one.
Yeah. I don't think about it too much from a personal point of view, because I think it would be too upsetting. We are a commercial, where we are now a business. Bearing in mind, OSBs is now called One Step Beyond Promotions. I started when I was 18 years old because I couldn't really work out what I was going to do.
So, and you're 50 now, Ian, aren't you? Are you 50 yet?
So. Not quite,
but I mean, that's the best. That's 30 years of your life. So that's almost 2/3 of your life has been one step beyond.
Yeah, and I was. So Ella now works for us. It's anything she's ever known. So she's 19 years old, having a gap from a university. She thought she'd come and work in the family business, so to speak. I don't know how she deals with it. She's sort of front line, so to speak. And I think but the minority being heard at the moment as far as the criticism that we get. And I think that's, unfortunately, that's part of it. There's a lot of people under a lot of pressure at the moment. Life is pretty crap. And I'm not just talking about from my point of view, generally for, you know, if you are a triathlete, then you would normally train. Triathletes are social animals. So we'll be training with our mates and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's our, you know, going out on the bike on a Sunday is our version of going to the pub on a Saturday night. And so none of that, those things are happening. So people are frustrated, and I do get an understanding. Don't like the personal stuff.
Well, can I just jump in there? Because Leah, your youngest daughter, wrote something on the Outlaw Facebook page about, you know, reading some of those posts, the ones that were sort of having a personal dig and saying how upset she was at reading that. I guess she perhaps hasn't had the number of years on this planet to develop such a hard skin as you have, Ian, you know. And so she probably does feel it more personally. But still, it makes me realise that often now on social media, people post stuff. And I know that this we wanted to talk about the Outlaw, but still, this is an integral part of it, the Facebook page, is that people post stuff without actually rereading what they're about to post or thinking about it or even dreaming that the other end of it is a real human being that's going to have some feelings when they read it.
Yeah, and in actual fact, she wrote it, posted it, and then used my a little theory that I have about stuff, and I won't go into it too much, but you better to sometimes ask forgiveness than ask permission.
I go along with that one, yeah.
So anyway, so basically she wrote to me and said, "Dad, I've put something on social. If you don't like it, I'll take it down." So, and I just said to her, "Darling, whatever you put, I'll support you." Anyway, I was doing something, and it might surprise people, but I have got to that point where I struggle to read some stuff, and she knows that. She's 17 years old. She's about to be 17, so she's savvy. She's got cracking Instagram. She doesn't do a great deal of Facebook, but I think people can tell what she wrote. She's a relatively switched on and savvy young lady. Anyway, I was doing something. I was in the car actually, and I sat in the car and read it. And that's the one. What she wrote touched me more than anything that anybody wrote. From a point of view, that was the one that actually sort of like got me close to tears. I'm not one of these sort of like blokes that won't cry in public. That one really got to me, and it was nice. What she wrote was absolutely unbelievable. Upsetting from my point of view because I try and hide my personal feelings. Quite often, because I don't want, I do personally think I'm really fortunate. I don't see my job as a job. I am lucky enough to basically do what I do every day by choice. And that's the frightening thing about the moment, because I've now, within reason, we're getting to the point where I've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the research into COVID-19 and things and how the sport's going to go in the future. But yeah, the business has stopped where we've got people still in the business to answer the phones and their emails and that sort of thing. But Adam and I, as two race directors, we're starting to struggle on what to do. So it's, I guess in some ways that's why I wanted to try and make Outlaw work in the four different
stuff. Yeah. Well, we've still got Outlaw X on the calendar. I'd like to come back to that in a moment. Let's just rewind a bit then, right back to the start of this whole COVID-19 thing. At what point did you start to get a feeling that your season might be disrupted?
Wearing a slightly different hat. We had Cambridge Half Marathon, which is one of our events. 15,000 runners, very first weekend of March. And there's two people who... graduates have contacted us about coronavirus, and you need to keep an eye on this, and you got to, you know, think about what's happening with your event. And at that point, it was making some. There were some media reports, not a great deal. Anyway, a week later, it was mainstream news, and you know, it was sort of like it was leaking into each country, and all of a sudden they started doing a count on cases, and then by the time that lockdown came, we ended up having to postpone the Clumber Park Duathlon, which was which is one of my separate events, and then all of a sudden the reality dawned that, hold on one second, this thing's here for a while. And probably when we went into lockdown, it was, well, you know, is it going to be 2 weeks? Is it going to be 3 weeks? We're obviously 6 weeks in and things aren't changing. And so we are now at the point of wondering whether we've got a season at all. Mm. We will be dictated to by the government. Whatever the government say, we'll stick. Obviously, we will adhere to those. We're now sitting on a working group with British Triathlon, along with all the other major organisers, about how the sport is for this year, how the sport is in the future, what our athletes going to do, what's sensible from, you know, what's how we can still organise a scaled down version of a major event. Does it work commercially? Are we going back to the drawing boards as far as events go? But it was literally, it was sort of like that, probably that few days before lockdown came, we suddenly realised that this is going to affect us, like, as a business. But still, we don't know how long for.
So Boris sort of said, I think it was the 25th of March, we're going to be in lockdown or soft lockdown for 3 weeks, which took us to the middle of April. And at that point, then he said, you know, it's going to go on for a little bit more, which it takes us to where we're at the moment, really. But there was no, at that point, British Triathlon only said races were cancelled up until the end of April. So, you know, what is it that shapes your decision there? Do you have to wait for the government to say that you can't do the race? Do you have to wait for guidance? British Triathlon obviously accredit all your races. So once they've pulled the plug, then there's nothing you can do really to circumvent that. Or is there some other trigger that you respond to?
No, it's a collection of everything, really. So, and a lot of, I guess, fairness from an athlete and a volunteer and a crew point of view. Because even if we could have got Outlaw on, how many of those people would have been able to train? And would it be safe for those athletes to race? And one of the things that we're pretty certain is that, you know, to organise a social, because we're pretty sure, and I think it'll probably get announced on Sunday and then enforced on Monday, the social distancing will, we need to go back on that, won't we?
So when you're making this decision to cancel in, you've got the government who are saying there's no sporting events can take place till this bit and you're all in soft lockdown. You've got British Triathlon who are saying there's no sporting events till this date. Or is there some other trigger to which you respond in order to cancel the race? I mean, for instance, we've still got Outlaw X. So what will be the trigger that causes you to pull the plug on that one if you have to?
I guess there's two questions there. First of all, what triggers Outlaw Full being cancelled? And that is a mixture. So government, we have to, you know, government is law, so we have no, you know, there's no comeback on that one. British Triathlon banning events is actually more of a directive. It means we wouldn't be able to go through permitting, which would then stop the event being insured and that type of thing. But from our point of view, there's sort of like we needed to let the athletes and the crew and the volunteers know what was happening. And also, you know, from a social distancing point of view, we just realised that it just wasn't going to be possible. There's not enough research and evidence available for us to know that we would be able to put an event, a safe event on. And that's safe from various points of view. Safe, have the athletes been able to train? Realistically, most probably not. Some, yes. Could we have done different distances? Yes, possibly. Could we have, you know, we talked about the finish line. Could we have actually been able to give athletes high five? Could we give them, you know, on the drink station, could we pass them a bottle safely via social distancing when they're out on the bike? Well, you know, would we expect everybody to get off their bike and pick a bottle up? And there's all these things that we were sort of like discussing, and it just sort of like, you know, it was, we really were pushing water uphill. And so that was, that made the decision that we just, we've got to be fair to everybody. We just can't do it at the moment. Okay, moving forward to Outlaw X. It's obviously it's then September, there's going to be, it's unlikely that we'd be the first people to put an event on at the end of September. It's a long way. And sort of like the French seem to be quite insistent that the Tour de France is going to happen. That, I believe that starts in the last week in August.
29th of August it is, yeah.
29th of August. I've heard various things that say that the first 2 days are going to be an individual time trial. So, because France are going to come out of lockdown in September or something.
They've pretty much, I think the Prime Minister's banned all sporting events until the 31st of August, which did make me wonder, well, why are they starting on the 29th? So they've clearly found some way of, you know, dodging around this, or some agreement with the French government that allows them to play within the rules, but outside of the rules at the same time.
I mean, ISO know what they're doing, and let's be honest, I'm pretty certain it's the biggest sporting event in France. So from a government point of view, that event will happen. So, there's from an Outlaw X point of view, we've already started looking at how can it exist and be safe and appropriate for everybody. And so hopefully, yeah, that event will be end of September, and, you know, it will be happening. And I think from an athlete point of view, we need something, everybody needs something to actually have as a marker, have as a goal. You know, we need the motivation. Mm. I'm training every day, and because of that, I think mentally I'm in a better place than I would be. I'm going out to Lanzarote doing 7.3 out there first week in October, so the week after Outlaw X. And that's my sort of, you know, that's the goal that I'm aiming for at the moment. And again, different country, different set of rules, same virus. Are we going to be able to travel out there? Actually, I don't know.
We talked earlier about the stick you've taken on Facebook. You've taken a lot. There's a couple of things. The deferral to next year, the refund process. I know you had to change your mind a few weeks back about the £20 fee. I'm interested in your thoughts on that. Also, some accusations that what causes the delay from all race directors, not just yourselves, is that they're waiting for a certain point where they can claim off the insurance. And if they cancel before, then the insurance will be invalid and the money will come out of their pocket. So that's, again, it's a two-part question. Is your own processes around deferral, how do you know what's the right process and steps to take and what to offer people, and the truth in the whole insurance thing?
Right. Part one, how do you know what's right? Well, clearly we've proved by changing our minds after getting it wrong the first time, we don't know what's right.
Can I just interject there? In fairness, there is no playbook, because this is the first time anyone in the world, even at the highest levels of government, have had to deal with something like this. So I think you can be excused for getting it wrong.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We sort of like, we got it wrong, and I think we're pretty open book about stuff, always have been. It's the way that I guess I was brought up, a little bit like yourself, Simon. You know, what you see is what you get. I mean, I'll tell you my theory was, when we first had to cancel everything and move everybody into next year, was, right, so I spoke to most of our suppliers, and I said, look, you know, John, I'm not using your 4,000 barriers this year and the X amount of toilets. And he was like, okay. And he says, well, look, you know, sort of, I realise you're not taking any money, but next year I'm going to put your prices up. And then I spoke to somebody else, and I spoke to somebody else, and I spoke to somebody else. And they were all fine, and they were okay about stuff. You know, they've got to run a business as well. Mm-hmm. And the conversation went to next year, and yeah, but, you know, Ian, we've lost a lot of business this year, so prices are going to go up. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I can see what's happening here. So my theory was, And maybe I just didn't explain it well enough. But so we'd move everybody forward. However, there's going to be a little bit of an extra fee because costs are going to go up. And we won't, I'm not going to take entry fees from 2020 and 2021. I have literally, we will be getting 1 year's worth of income to pay for 2 years. And people, strangely enough, Ella answering the phone or Charlie answering the phone, our phone system, you have to pay for, Charlie, Ellie, you have to pay for rent, rates, etc. We've got a lovely fleet of vehicles, you've probably seen them, we've got the Silver Bullet, we try and knock about in. And none of these things actually get, we still have to pay for them. And so our fixed overheads aren't massively reduced or didn't look like they're going to be massively reduced. So that's where my theory of 20 quid extra, okay, got it wrong, and basically went, look, I'm ever so sorry, I've got it wrong, you can all move into next year. Which seemed to have pleased a few people. Somebody said to me, Ian, it's a bit of a Gerald Ratner situation. I don't think it was quite as bad as that. I didn't say that our products were crap. I genuinely believe we put on bloody good events. And so wasn't quite as bad as that. However, yeah, you know, it received really badly. I saw
quite interesting though, Ian, that not longer than a few days before you did that, Challenge Roth postponed their race until 2021 and then asked everybody for €90, and Zibby was seen as a bit of a hero for doing all of that.
Yeah, Felix. Yeah, it was quite interesting because so I saw it and shared it with some of the other sort of race organisers that are similar to us, and we had a bit of a laugh and a joke that sort of like 5,000. I think is it 7,000 entries Felix takes. 90 euros each. So we just missed out, and we should have done a video. I think that would have been it. But no, I mean, sort of, like, I'm speaking in jest. It was a difficult one. It was a very fast learning curve. We're slightly different in some ways. You know, you can't get into Roth. It's like hen's teeth. And so some people are just grateful to be able to do that race. Going forward, we were then challenged on why our refunds were set at that scale. So chatting to some of the other race organisers that, you know, do similar events to us, they don't offer a refund. They literally go, right, you're going into next year's event. Maybe we made a mistake there. Maybe we shouldn't have offered a refund and just said you were going into next year's events. And in fairness, there's a difference between us and some of the race organisers. But they seem to have potentially got away with it. I can't talk about every single event organiser and that sort of thing. Everyone's very different. I think that some people want a refund, some people need a refund. We give back what I believe is fair. I don't want to particularly share the costs of our business, but we are a business and we've got overheads. And anybody's welcome to come to our offices and come and sit and have a chat in the boardroom that we've got. We're not plush. We're a Lincolnshire-based business. We're in Lincoln. We're not got excessive rent bills or anything like that, but we have overheads. Our website costs a few quid, et cetera, et cetera.
What about this whole situation with the insurance then? It came about last year, didn't it? When there were comments that the reason you cancelled the outlaw bike section after the swim had started was so you didn't have to refund people. I mean, I was there. I know all about that, so we don't need to revisit that one. That was just the weather gods. But it's something that's been affecting all race organisers. Do you have to wait to a certain period for insurance to kick in, or is that the least of your worries and you're doing it because of all the things you just explained?
You have to balance things. Sort of like, yeah, so we... when in some ways we're more fortunate than others, but we did have some insurance cover. And in fairness, as you'd understand, no insurance company wants to pay out at the moment. You know, they must be, they're the opposite. You know, they're going to be clawing money back for years and years and years. And I don't know what the deal is with the government, you know, but you know, we've been working quite closely with our insurance company. You can understand it from their point of view, they're not going to literally open their arms and say, don't you worry, they're in, everything will be fine. Because I'm one customer of probably thousands. Mm. And so they're quite specific on how an insurance claim will trigger and what's covered and that sort of things. And I don't think there, and I could be wrong, I don't think there is a cover that will allow a race organiser such as us to be able to just 100% refund everybody's money back and pay all of our overheads and all that sort of. And if it is, it would be stupidly expensive. There's something quite interesting about Wimbledon tennis. As the wife coming in to blow me a kiss, by the way. Now, there's something interesting about Wimbledon tennis and how they've managed to refund everybody's tickets and that sort of thing. Interestingly, they don't actually sell out, do they? Because they have this thing where people obviously pay to go in on the day and all that sort of thing. So, yeah. Insurance, it definitely plays a role. Is it a big role? No, it's just another thing that you have to balance against, whether it's right for the insurers, right for athletes, you know, partners and all that sort of thing.
So what about the future then? We've talked about Outlaw X. I guess the relays, one of your other events will be in that same category. That comes at the end of August. So that's just before, a month before Outlaw X. And then there's 2021. There won't be any entry fees coming in for next year because you've had to defer so many people. We've got this whole social distancing conundrum to work out. Because if we haven't got a vaccine, then we're all still dancing around how to avoid getting ill for those of us who haven't been ill yet. So, I'm sure you get excited when you've got the thought of putting on a new race and working out how to do it. Because that's part of the puzzle. But is this going to be a challenge that you're relishing about working out how to organise races and take into account social distancing, or is it just going to be a huge headache for everyone?
Because we've already looked into it, I'm actually quite enjoying it because it actually gives us a focus. Because when all you've done for nearly 30 odd years is think about how many bikes you can fit in the transition area and how many runners are going to be in this section and that sort of thing, then it's nice to have a sort of like slightly different challenge. So that's, I'm quite enjoying that. So that's good. If I think about it too long and too hard, then I understand that basically it's going to, I don't think triathlon for a few years is going to look the same. Mm. I think most of the major events have done for a while. We're not, you know, for example, we were hoping to probably get 2,000 into Outlaw X for this year. Social distancing will definitely be here. So we've got to think about how that works. Will we be able to put 2,000 people in? Pretty certain we won't. Interesting about the relays, because we relays at the end of August, but historically has been full every year for the last 20 odd years. Gets, I think, 1,680 people throughout the day at that event. And one of the things that the tagline for the relays is it's organised chaos. Well, you can't do organised chaos and social distancing. So what's happening there? I don't know. My British Triathlon are a major partner in that event, so it could be something that we're working with them on. Are we hopeful that it's going to happen? Somehow, yeah. And it's good. You know, it's one of those things. It's a club event. And I think that's really important for me, even just from a mental, not only physical point of view, but it's good that we can, you know, hopefully we'll be able to socialise a little bit. And it's good to get everybody together. So hopefully that event will happen. Going into 2021, hopefully, are we going to be able to have events as big as they were? No. Are we going to be able to have events that are capacity at 1,000? Maybe. Will they feel the same? No. Will you be queuing up for registration? Very unlikely. Will the process of self-policing from a point of view of disclaimers and waivers and saying that you fit? Yes. Do we think the virus is going to have a long-term effect on people's respiratory system, heart, kidneys, etc., etc.? We don't know, but possibly. What's going to happen on the bike as far as drafting goes? There's already papers that are written that says you've got to be cycling 20 meters behind somebody. And
maybe that's what we've needed for drafting then. the threat of a virus if you get too close.
Yeah, exactly. You don't get 2 minutes anymore. You get coronavirus.
Yeah.
So our event's going to look different. Yeah. From a sponsor point of view, let's say Colin at Rayskin, that's always been an Outlaw sponsor. He comes to the Outlaw. It's commercial. He gets to meet his mates. It's social as well. Right? How are the sponsors going to feel? Because it's unlikely we're going to have an expo. You're not going to put 1,000 people into a tent. Because basically that just, you can't, you can put 50 people into a tent and that's not going to work for anybody. Going forward, 2021, I think there will be events. I think they'll be much smaller. I think we'll go a little bit backward step. All of a sudden pool swim events will become a little bit more than normal, because hopefully by that point we will know first of all, swimming pools will be open. And it's like, what's going to happen with age group racing? What's going to happen with Kona? What's going to happen with Challenge Daytona? And all those sorts of things.
Yeah, lots to think about. And I mean, it's, a commentator, that's one hat I wear, so that'll be me. Maybe I'll get my wish to have an elevated commentary booth all of a sudden, protected by some PPE shields, and the four of us each within our own little booth inside another bigger booth, watching TV screens and that sort of thing. But then as a coach, all of those things that you've just mentioned about what people who've been ill, particularly those who've had bad coughs and bad chest complaints, or maybe even those who've ended up in hospital, how does that affect the respiratory system? What are the long-term implications for that? And returning to exercise, we still don't know. There's an awful lot of stuff, particularly that I've been going on about, maybe people not pushing themselves as hard, because if you train hard, that you're compromising your immune system a bit more, and that makes it a little bit easier for your body to pick up germs and the ones that you don't want. So there's lots of things that we've all got to start revisiting and thinking about in terms of preparation. And, we talk about that. Ultimately, we're talking about the health of humanity, aren't we, for the time being, not just triathlon, because it's not just our sport that's affected.
Nah, it's all, whether it's any type of sport is affected, any type of mass gathering is affected. I've got friends that are also organised concerts. Hmm. Maybe they had a cracking set of concerts organised this year in country houses with some, they were getting a lot, 40, 50,000 people. That's their business got. Tour operators as well, as tour operators within triathlon that now can't do anything. You've got, sort of like, my little bubble's got triathlon in it and not a lot else. So I'm thinking of that all the time. But, outside these four walls, there's a lot that's happening, a lot that's going to change. And the key thing at the moment is that we all stay safe and well. Mm. And, there's going to be some people that are worried about, oh dear, worried about that X amount of refund and that type of thing. But there's a big picture, and we all want to be here next year, safe, and hopefully racing again.
Yeah, well, I amen to that, Ian, because I think that'd be number one on my list of priorities, is that we're all healthy. We're all of us, not just the immediate ones that we come into contact with, the triathletes, but their families as well and everybody that's in their world, and that we all do. As Vera Lynn said, we all meet again someday, but we don't know when.
Very true. I got no response for that one whenever Vera Lynn's mentioned.
Well, it was VE Day the other day, and hopefully we've all still remember the words after singing it. So maybe we get to sing it again at the end of an outlaw event this year, or hopefully in 2021.
Okay, you can lead the singing then.
That'll be my finish line. That'll be my finish line. Thank you and good night speech.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and well, listen, Ian, it's been tough. I know it's been tough for you. It's been tough for all of our athletes that were busy training for outlaw events and had their hopes and ambitions for 2020 dashed. Hopefully, we'll get something together this year at Outlaw X. But if not, then we'll hopefully be back in some format yet to be announced in 2021. So for those of you who are preparing for outlaw events, don't give up hope. Being an outlaw is about more than athletic pedigree. It's about having resilience. You need resilience to get through the training, and you need resilience on race day, because things don't always go your way. And for me as a coach, I see this is just another challenge that we have to get through, another mental and physical challenge, and get through it we will. And unfortunately, it's open-ended at the moment, but we will get through it, and we'll all emerge maybe a little stronger mentally and hopefully still physically fit.
Yeah, and you know, I can't say any more than what you know, just to repeat certain points. You know, we all want to be here. I think at the moment we're bunkering down, we're probably looking after ourselves and we're looking after those that are close, and it's the right thing and it's understandable. But, you know, given time and a bit of care for everybody and each other, then we will, as Vera Lynn says, meet again.
Well, I've got a great finish for us, Ian. You know what we all say at the finish line, don't you? You follow along after me.
No.
You ready? You will be an
outlaw.
That's the one. Thanks everybody for listening. Goodbye from me, and
thank you. Goodbye from me.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.